Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Tom Cooley, Chief Financial Officer of the National Science Foundation. Also joining us in our conversation is Steve Watson. Tom, how is NSF promoting partnership with academia, government, industry, and international stakeholders?
That's an easy one. Person-to-person contact. Without that personal contact, things just aren't going to get done. This is one area that I would say NSF has excelled in the past 55 years of our existence. The very nature of research is global in scope. That caused the agency, when it was first forming itself, to worry about how do you touch all the bases? How do we touch the Office of Naval Research? How do we touch the United States Department of Agriculture and their research programs? So many of our program managers that reside at the National Science Foundation know the other program managers that work at the Office of Naval Research or the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, DARPA, or the USDA. So there's that inside the government natural connection that already exists. And we frequently invite them to be reviewers on our panels, and they invite us to be reviewers on their panels. In terms of working with academe, that is the fundamental tenet of the principle of operation at the National Science Foundation. The relationship between the foundation as an arm of the federal government and academe is one of partnership. We expect them to put something in. You know, they turn on the lights every day for the PIs, and they make sure the water is running. The PIs give something back to the institution. Sure, they're being paid a salary, but they're expected to teach and do research, find time to mentor students, graduate students, postdocs, find time to talk with undergraduates, bring undergraduate students into the laboratory, and have an undergraduate research experience for those students who are thinking about a science or engineering career. Reach out to the community, visit high schools. That is just a nature of our business. Even our own program managers in NSF do science fairs, participate in research at nearby universities, keep their ongoing research programs going. Industry's been a bit more of a sticky wicket, and I think that our real outreach to industry started about in the 1970s, but really solidified under our director for 6 years from, I think it was about 84 to 90, Dr. Eric Block. He envisioned a couple of very key programs that required industrial participation. That has promoted a lot more partnerships. We have some centers. I remember one that's up in Rochester, New York, where for a long time, I believe it's still in existence, Kodak was a major partner because it was research on in the whole field of photography. And then international, well, we have several ways to do that. First of all, government-wide, you've got the State Department. So you always need to be concerned with working through the State Department, particularly in some sensitive countries. But we have our own Office of International Science and Engineering, and they have their own connections to their counterparts in, out in the other countries. So, for example, my boss at the time, who was the chief operating officer, Joe Bordonia, and I were invited to go to Beijing about a year and a half ago because the National Science Foundation's counterpart in the Chinese government, located in Beijing, was undergoing a strategic planning and visioning exercise, and they wanted to know how NSF did it and how NSF implemented it and sold it to their own administration. Well, we found out about that because there was a very natural relationship between the people in those in that office in Beijing and our people here at NSF in the Office of International Science and Engineering, who are always going back and forth and touching base and finding out what's going on in each other's countries. So we do that with virtually every country on every continent. And of course, with cell phones now, it's instantaneous call-up, dial-up, email, whatever. Then there are some research communities which, by their very nature, are international in scope. The astronomy community comes to mind. The ocean sciences community comes to mind. But you see more and more this internationalization of research. Biosciences is probably the hottest topic right now, and that's the sharing of information across borders about what's going on with the human genome and plant genomes and how to worry about getting better crops that are drought resistant or other kinds of things. That's very important on a worldwide basis.
Tom, looking into the future, what are the major challenges you see for the National Science Foundation generally, and then more specifically for your office?
Making sure that people can actually go home at the end of a very busy, hard day. We all work more than 8 hours. We know that now. Email has made it. You work virtually 24/7. I get home, I take off my tie, and in the summertime put on shorts and go around flip-flops around the house because of the heat. But after dinner, I log on. Do Do I have any important messages? Did somebody need to give me a heads up about things the next day? Is there something I didn't get to today because I had meetings all day long and I didn't have time to actually sit back and think? I think that, in my own opinion right now, the biggest problem that we as a nation are facing is that there's so little time left to be proactive. We're reacting to everything because it's information coming at you 24/7, whether it's TV, radio, email, people in the halls. And having that quiet time to stop and think strategically about where you should go right now is lacking. So I guess the answer to the question is the biggest significant challenge is carving out a piece of time to yourself and letting your employees carve out a similar piece of time to themselves. One of the ways I do that is I refuse to have an iPod or a BlackBerry or a cell phone. If you want to reach me, I log on to email. You can leave me a message. If it's really that important, you have that venue, but I don't want you calling me on my cell phone at 11 p.m. at night. Nothing's that urgent. I'll deal with it in the morning when I get in. And I think that as long as people, wherever they work, feel like they still have that little safe spot they can go to, you know, you can keep pushing yourself along. You can bring home the paycheck. You can do what you need to do for the family. But we all need that little safe spot.
Tom, earlier in the program, you told us a wonderful story about how you got started. What advice can you give a person who is interested in a career in public service?
Understand what you're getting into. I think that was the real wake-up call for me when I got into my first real job. Like many of us, we had part-time jobs in high school and college. I worked my way through college. But, you know, you see multiple career paths, and sometimes you have to actually get on that path and find out for yourself whether you're going to be happy or not. In terms of the basics, I think most people who are worried about any kind of future career need to be thinking about, to what extent am I going to be happy, and to what extent is my earning power going to support my family if I'm the kind of person that wants to have a family, big or small. So good high school education, certainly go to college, because I think having a college degree opens up your earning potential as you get older. If you really love college, stay in college, get a master's, get an MBA, go on for a PhD if you're interested in pursuing education, if you're interested in pursuing science or engineering. I'll tell you one thing about having a well-rounded, educated background, whether it's just a bachelor's or a master's, is I do think it prepares you to take advantages of the opportunities. As we all know in life, doors close, and it's up to you to find out where that window is open. And trust me, based on my own personal experience, when a door closes somewhere, there's always a window open somewhere. But you got to find it. And then when you find it, you have to have confidence in yourself that your background, your education, your experience, your training allows you to leap through that window. And frankly, if you're not sure, leap anyway. Take the chance. You can always go to the supervisor and say, you know, I thought I really understood this. I need some more training in this area. And if you got a good supervisor, they're going to say, absolutely, go do it. I'll pay for it.
Tom, that's just great advice. Unfortunately, that'll have to be our last question. Steve and I want to thank you for fitting us in your busy schedule and joining us this morning. And we also want to especially thank you for your service to our country, both first at the Department of Agriculture and now at the National Science Foundation.
Well, that's great. I really do appreciate that. I'm third generation in service to this country. So over the past 100 years, I've loved living in Washington, D.C. all my life. If anybody wants to find anything else out about the National Science Foundation, very simple website, www.nsf.gov. Thank you.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Tom Cooley, Chief Financial Officer of the National Science Foundation. Be sure to visit us on the web at www.businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's fascinating conversation. Once again, that's www.businessofgovernment.org. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Albert Morales. Thank you for listening.